if I told you that Albert Einstein, Isaac Newton, and James Clerk Maxwell all basically failed to finish their life's work because of a typo?
A typo.
Yeah, but like not a typo in their equations or some mistake in their actual observations in the lab. I'm talking about a fundamental error in human mathematics that was invented by a Greek philosopher, 2.5 millennia ago.
I mean, it is just a staggering premise
No, totally.
to suggest that the bedrock of modern physics has this structural crack in it, a crack that has been sitting there completely unnoticed for 2,500 years. It completely reorients how we have to look at the
It
universe.
really does. So, welcome to the deep dive, everyone. Today, we have our hands on some truly revolutionary and frankly mind-bending source material.
It's incredible stuff.
It's a dense theoretical physics paper dated May 16th, 2026. It's called The Grand Symphony of Unification, The Noetherian Axiom and the End of the Platonic Rift. And it's authored by Davy Nowell Lynch and the 3K Collaborative.
Yeah, and calling it dense is, well, it's almost an understatement.
Oh, for sure.
This paper isn't just, tweaking existing models of physics. It proposes a total procedural ontology.
Which sounds intimidating, but we'll break it down.
Right. It literally rebuilds the physical universe from a single geometric knot. It derives the four fundamental constants of nature without plugging in a single outside number.
Which is unheard of.
And perhaps most radically of all, honestly, it places your consciousness, the listener's consciousness, right at the mechanical center of reality.
Which is wild. So, whether you are prepping for a high-level physics debate or you're just insanely curious about the fundamental fabric of reality, we are going to guide you through this.
Step by step.
Exactly. And I promise, we are going to skip the impenetrable jargon. Whenever we hit a wall of math, we're going to break it down. Our mission today is to focus on those massive aha moments.
There are a lot of them.
So many, because by the end of this deep dive, you are going to walk away seeing the universe and your specific place in it in a completely new way.
So to understand how this new framework, the Noetherian Universe Theory, or KUT for short, actually works, we first have to understand why modern physics is stuck.
Right. Where did we go wrong?
The paper argues that to find the glitch in the matrix, we have to go all the way back to the scene of the metaphysical crime.
And that crime scene is a riverbank in ancient Greece, sometime in the 5th century BCE.
Yeah, picture the scene.
Paint it for us. We've got this philosophical standoff between two absolute heavyweights of antiquity, right? Heraclitus and Parmenides.
Exactly. So picture these two men looking at the exact same river, but they are drawing completely fundamentally opposite conclusions about the nature of reality itself.
Okay.
Heraclitus looks at the rushing water and famously declares, "You cannot step into the same river twice."
Right, because the water is always moving.
Right. He's arguing that reality is a process. It is pure flux. There is no static thing called the universe. Being is a verb.
The riverbed is shifting. The person stepping into it is aging. It's an endless stream of becoming.
Exactly the point Heraclitus was making. But then you have Parmenides standing right next to him.
Yeah, what does he say?
He looks at reality and argues that all of this change, all of this flux, is just an illusion. It's created by our imperfect biological senses.
Oh, wow.
He says true reality, the reality you can only access with pure mathematical reason, is eternal. It's indivisible and it's unchanging. So for Parmenides, being is a noun.
Universe as a verb versus universe as a noun. It feels like one of those late-night dorm room debates where nobody actually wins,
Book
right?
says. Yes.
But the paper argues this specific argument is the founding wound of Western science because Plato steps in to mediate.
Yeah, Plato attempts to synthesize these two totally incompatible views, and he does it by creating this massive metaphysical compromise.
Like a philosophical band-aid.
Pretty much, he essentially says, Heraclitus, you are right about the visible material world. Things change, they rot, they decay.
Right.
But then he turns to Parmenides and says, but you are right about ultimate reality.
Plato invents the realm of eternal
Well,
form.
for forms.
Yeah.
Right. So the physical chair you are sitting on will eventually break down, but the abstract form of a chair is eternal, perfect, and static.
Okay, let's unpack this compromise. Plato creates a dual reality, but to describe these perfect eternal forms, he needs a new kind of math, right?
Yes.
He needs a language of perfection. And this is where the paper says the pathogen is introduced.
Mathematical pathogen is the exact phrase the authors use, and it's just remarkably fitting.
It's a great term.
To describe these static perfect forms, Plato and the geometers who followed him, like Euclid, they created tools of pure abstraction.
Like what?
The infinite line, the completed perfect circle, and most importantly, the foundational building block of all modern math. The dimensionless point.
The dimensionless point, a location in space that has exactly zero volume, zero duration, and zero energy. It's a coordinate.
Right, it's just a concept.
It's pure abstraction.
And consider why this matters and why it has plagued physics ever since. When you assume that the foundation of reality is a point with zero volume and zero duration, you are smuggling a static, timeless assumption into the very foundation of a dynamic universe.
You're baking the flaw right into the cake.
Exactly. You are anchoring your math in a static noun while trying to describe a verb.
It's like, it's like trying to calculate the flow of a rushing river by pausing a video of it, zooming all the way in, and measuring a single frozen pixel.
Yes, perfect analogy.
The pixel has no movement in it. It has no time in it. You cannot derive flow from a static, dead pixel.
That is the disconnect in a nutshell. And the paper argues that Newton, Maxwell, and Einstein all achieved their brilliant world-changing unifications, but they all unknowingly built their entire theoretical architectures on this platonic dimensionless point.
Because it was just the default setting of mathematics. Nobody questioned the pixel.
Nobody at all.
You go to school, you learn geometry, you draw a point on a graph, it's completely invisible bias. So how did this specific error trip up Isaac Newton?
Well, Newton gave us universal gravitation, right? He unified the falling apple on Earth and the orbiting moon in space.
Massive breakthrough.
It was. But to make his math work with dimensionless points, his clockwork universe required the invention of absolute static space and absolute time. He had to build a rigid stage for his points to move around on.
Ah, yes.
And then Maxwell unified electricity and magnetism. But to carry those waves, he had to rely on the concept of an invisible static ether filling the universe.
Which we later proved didn't exist at all.
Exactly.
And then we get to Einstein. He comes along, throws out Newton's absolute space and time, throws out Maxwell's ether, and unifies space and time into this beautiful curving fabric of space-time.
He fixes a lot of the problems.
But where does the dimensionless point ruin general relativity?
It breaks down at its own extremes. General relativity is beautiful when predicting, you know, the orbit of Mercury. But what happens when a dying star collapses in on itself to form a black hole?
It crushes down.
Right. The mass forces all that mass into a single dimensionless point, a singularity.
A location of infinite density occupying zero volume.
And the equations literally break. They return infinity.
Which is nature's way of telling you that your math is wrong. You can't have infinity in nature.
You really can't. And when you zoom way in with quantum mechanics, you run into different infinities. The paper brings up renormalization.
Yeah, I need you to translate this, because I've always heard renormalization described as a legitimate mathematical tool, but the paper quotes Richard Feynman himself calling it hocus pocus.
Yeah, Feynman was incredibly skeptical of his own Nobel-winning work for this exact reason. In quantum field theory, if you assume an electron is a dimensionless point occupying literally zero space, the self-interacting energy density at that point becomes infinite.
Oh, so the math blows up again.
Exactly. Oh. Physicists literally have to subtract infinity from infinity to get a finite number that matches their experiments.
Wait, you can't just subtract infinity from infinity.
I know, right? They basically sweep the infinite errors under the mathematical rug.
Because the dimensionless point keeps breaking the equations. So if the platonic point is the pathogen that ruined Einstein's black holes and Feynman's electrons, what is the cure?
Well, the cure requires switching the universe back from a noun to a verb.
How does this Newellian theory propose we fix the math?
KUT proposes completely replacing the standard cosmological model.
Right.
Right now, we treat the universe like an expanding balloon, right? A thing that exists and stretches.
Yeah, the Big Bang model.
Right. The paper replaces this with a model of a living performance.
The living performance. So the universe isn't a balloon. It is a continuous act of becoming.
Yes.
The paper says space-time is just the ash left behind by the engine's combustion.
They term this procedural ontology. The rendering process itself is primary. Matter, energy, and space-time are secondary. They're just the exhaust of the engine.
The ash.
And this entire procedural engine is governed by a single irreducible axiom. It's written as negative C is greater than infinity is less than positive C.
Okay, hold on. Negative C is greater than infinity is less than positive C. I promised you the listener, no jargon, so we have to translate this.
Fair enough.
The paper is very insistent that this is a dynamic tension, right? Not a static equation of equality. It's a description of an engine running. Walk us through the three pieces.
Let's start on the left side. Negative C represents the control field. This is the rendered past.
Okay.
It is absolute causal determinism, the crystallized, unchangeable record of everything that has already happened. It is completely rigid.
The ash, the exhaust that has already cooled down.
The ash. Now, on the far right side, you have positive C. This is the chaos field.
Which is what?
It is the completely unrendered future. It is the realm of pure quantum indeterminacy and infinite potential. It is everything that could possibly happen, but hasn't yet been forced to happen.
So you have the rigid, crystallized past pressing in from one side, and the chaotic, swirling future pressing in from the other. What is happening in the middle?
In the middle is infinity, which the paper also represents as I, the imaginary unit in mathematics. This is the instant.
The present moment.
The perpetual, fleeting present. It's the needle eye. It is the exact agonizing pivot point where the massive, unrendered future of the chaos field is forced through a bottleneck.
And rendered into reality.
Exactly. Rendered into a single definitive state and committed into the permanent record of the control field.
Let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around this. Are we saying the universe literally doesn't exist out there until this engine renders it?
Pretty much.
It sounds exactly like a video game. Like the hard drive holds all the possibilities of the game world, but the console only loads and renders the specific room your character is standing in at that exact moment.
That analogy hits the nail on the head. The universe is the process of this continuous rendering. The room doesn't exist as a solid object until the processor calculates it.
That is wild.
And what makes this paradigm shift so powerful is how the paper connects this back to other pillars of human knowledge that we thought we understood. Take Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared.
Right. Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Everyone knows the letters, even if they don't know the physics.
In standard physics, it's just a conversion factor. It tells you how much energy you get if you destroy a chunk of mass.
Sure.
But in this new Noelian framework, C squared takes on a profoundly different meaning. It is the specific thermodynamic cost, the activation energy, required to pull one unit of unrendered potential from the chaos field, squeeze it through that needle eye, and turn it into actualized rendered mass in the control field.
Wait, so?
The speed of light isn't just a speed limit. It is the fundamental clock rate of the universe's rendering engine.
Whoa, so light speed isn't about how fast a photon moves through space. It's the processing speed of reality itself. It's the refresh rate of the monitor.
Now you're seeing the conceptual shift. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it even reframes philosophy.
Really? How so?
Well, the authors bring up Socrates. He famously said, "All I know is that I know nothing."
Right. The ultimate statement of intellectual humility.
Standard history views it as epistemic humility. But KUT argues it isn't just a humble philosophy, it's structural physics.
Structural physics. Yeah. From I know nothing.
Yes. You literally cannot know the future, the chaos field, because the very mechanical act of knowing it, observing it, and measuring it would force it through the needle eye.
Oh.
It would collapse the probability and render it into the past.
Because knowing is a form of rendering. You can't observe the unrendered future without accidentally rendering it. That is incredible.
It completely bridges physics and philosophy.
Okay, I'm hooked on the philosophy. Reframing Socrates and Einstein is fun.
Hmm.
But if you are going to publish a paper claiming you have discovered the grand unified theory of the universe, you have to prove it with hard numbers, right?
Absolutely.
The global physics community isn't going to accept a new paradigm based on a really cool video game metaphor.
Nor should they. A true unified theory must do more than offer a compelling narrative. It must derive the fundamental measured constants of nature from absolute scratch.
And we need to emphasize to you, the listener, what from scratch means here. Standard physics relies on what are called free parameters.
Right.
If I'm building the standard model of particle physics, I have to measure the mass of an electron in a lab and then manually type that number into my equation to make the math work, right?
That is the current state of affairs, yes. The standard model relies on 19 of these free parameters.
19 of them.
19 dials that physicists have simply turned until the math matches our laboratory observations, with absolutely no underlying explanation for why the universe chose those specific numbers.
They're just magic numbers we wrote down.
Exactly. But the KUT paper claims that if you replace Plato's dimensionless point with a specific finite geometric shape, what they call a node, you can mathematically derive these foundational constants without turning any dials.
Okay, we are throwing out the infinitely small point. What is the shape of this node? What is the seed of reality?
The topological seed is the 3-2 torus knot. In mathematics, it's commonly known as the trefoil knot.
Okay, listeners, picture a continuous string that loops and crosses over itself three times while winding around an invisible donut shape twice. It's a very elegant looping structure.
It is the simplest non-trivial knot possible. It has three longitudinal windings, which KUT naturally maps to the temporal phases we discussed, past, present, future.
That makes sense.
And it has two meridional windings, which map to the binary polarity of the engine, control and chaos.
Wow, it maps perfectly.
According to the paper, this specific finite knot generates what they term the Chiro-Q lattice.
Okay, I promise no jargon without an explain like I'm five translation. Chiro-Q lattice. What is in a periodic pentagonal vacuum substrate?
Think of it as the microscopic floor tiles of reality. It's the underlying structural grid of the vacuum.
Okay, floor tile.
But unlike square tiles on your bathroom floor, which are perfectly periodic and repeating, a pentagonal lattice creates an aperiodic structure. It doesn't repeat perfectly. It has a built-in geometric irrationality.
So reality is built on a floor of five-sided tiles that never quite line up evenly.
Right.
And from this single finite shape on this slightly crooked floor, the paper attempts what they call the quad train of derivations, deriving four completely different constants of the universe.
Let's follow the logical progression. The first thing we need to define in a physical universe is matter, specifically mass. So the first derivation tackles the proton to electron mass ratio.
In standard physics, a proton is roughly 1,836 times heavier than an electron. But again, no one knows why. It's just a brute fact of nature we measured in a lab.
There is a historical anomaly here, though. Decades ago, a physicist named J.J. Lenz noticed a bizarre numerical coincidence. He found a specific, seemingly random mathematical formula that yielded a number incredibly close to this 1836 ratio.
And what did the physics community do with that?
Mainstream physics dismissed it as a mathematical ghost, just playing with numbers until you get the answer you want. But the KUT paper exercises that ghost.
How? How do you get the mass of a particle from a knot?
By analyzing the volume of that specific topological shape. Remember, we abandoned the dimensionless point. Particles now take up space.
Right.
In KUT, an electron is a single strand of this trefoil knot. A proton, as a baryon, is a more complex three-strand bound configuration rendering on the lattice.
Okay, so they have different volumes.
Yes. The topological volume difference between that single strand and the three-strand knot yields a pure geometric factor. The factor is 6 multiplied by pi to the fifth power.
6 times pi to the power of 5. The number 6 comes from the knot's linking number, and the 5 comes from its total winding sum, the 3 longitudinal plus 2 meridional winds.
Exactly.
There are no lab measurements here. It's pure deductive geometry. And if you run that calculation,
you get 1836.118. It perfectly matches the observed mass ratio of the universe's two most stable foundational particles.
Okay, that is wild. So the trefoil knot gives us mass. But if these particles have actual volume now, what happens when you try to crush them together? That logically leads us to the second derivation, density.
Precisely. We return to the black hole problem. Standard physics breaks down at the singularity because it allows infinite density in zero volume.
Which we established is impossible.
Right. KUT argues that singularities are mathematically and physically illegal. Reality is made of these discrete, finite nodes. You cannot compress them out of existence. There must be a maximum calculable density wall.
The ultimate crush limit. The paper calls it the ultimaton. It's the point where the universe's hard drive is totally full and you literally cannot fit another byte of data into that region of space.
Exactly. And they calculate this absolute density ceiling by looking at the geometry of that pentagonal floor. They use the golden ratio, which naturally governs pentagonal structures, and factor in the friction of the rendering engine.
And what's the number?
The derived maximum density value is exactly 5.16.
5.16. Listeners, write that number down, put it in your pocket, because it is going to come back in the strangest possible way at the end of this deep dive.
It really is.
Okay, so we have mass, and we know we can't crush it into infinity. What happens when you try to move this mass across the floor tiles? That brings us to derivation 3, light impedance.
The inverse fine structure constant. The measured value in physics is roughly 137.036.
And Richard Feynman, who we mentioned earlier, obsessed over this number, right?
Oh, he called it a damn mystery and a magic number. It essentially dictates the strength of electromagnetic interactions.
It's the number that decides why atoms are the size they are, why light interacts with matter the way it does, and why chemistry exists at all.
Feynman thought it was magic, but KUT argues it's just friction. Specifically, it's the exact topological impedance, the grinding resistance of pushing a rational, mathematically closed trefoil knot through an irrational, aperiodic, pentagonal vacuum substrate.
Okay, explain rational knot versus irrational substrate for me.
Imagine trying to mesh a gear with exactly three teeth into a track that is spaced for gears with five teeth, or a fractional number of teeth.
It doesn't fit perfectly.
It doesn't. It grinds. It catches. The authors use a theorem from advanced knot theory, called the Jones polynomial, to calculate this exact mathematical mismatch. The resulting numerical tax of moving the knot through the lattice matches the inverse fine structure constant perfectly.
It's the resistance the universe feels when trying to print a new frame of reality.
Exactly.
And this flows perfectly into the fourth derivation, because wherever there is friction and resistance, there is heat. The heat of becoming.
The cosmic microwave background temperature, or CMB.
Right.
Standard cosmology views this ubiquitous background radiation, which is measured at 2.730 Kelvin, as a cooling relic of the Big Bang. They view it as a historical photograph of the very early universe that is slowly, gradually freezing toward absolute zero.
But KUT says no, it's not an ancient echo of a one-time explosion.
It is the steady-state operating temperature of the engine currently running. Because you are continually forcing that rational knot through the irrational lattice at the Planck scale, there's a fundamental, unavoidable angular misalignment, an irreducible computational rounding error.
Which creates friction.
And that constant geometric friction generates heat. The universe cannot cool below 2.730 Kelvin because that is the baseline Joule heating of existence rendering itself right now.
Okay, I am fascinated, but this is the moment where I have to play devil's advocate. I have to push back.
Go for it.
How can a purely mathematical shape, a knot on a whiteboard, spit out the exact physical temperature of outer space? If I'm a skeptical physicist, my first thought is the authors worked backward.
Of course.
They knew the CMB was 2.73. They played with the golden ratio and pi until they found a formula that equaled 2.73, and they called it a grand unified theory.
That is the necessary scientific question to ask.
Yeah.
But look closely at the mathematical structure the paper provides. These are zero-parameter, closed-form derivations.
Meaning what?
To work backward and fudge the numbers, you would need to introduce arbitrary variables, those free parameters we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Dials you can tune, but KUT doesn't do that.
No dials.
None. It only uses rigid integers derived inherently from the trefoil knot. It's three longitudinal and two meridional windings and universal geometric constants like pi and the golden ratio.
So there's nowhere to hide a fake number.
Exactly. If this is a massive mathematical coincidence, think about the statistical probability required.
It's staggering.
To independently derive four completely different foundational physical constants across the domains of mass, gravity, electromagnetism, and thermodynamics, all from one single topological shape, without turning a single dial. It defies statistical probability.
It's like finding a random jagged rock in a riverbed and realizing it acts as a perfect skeleton key to open the four most secure, impenetrable vaults in physics. It demands attention.
And the authors actually issue an open invitation for mathematicians to try and break the math. They are that confident in the geometry.
So, assuming the math holds up, and that is a massive journey for the scientific community to take, how does this rendering engine actually solve the ultimate embarrassment of physics?
The schism.
Yeah, I'm talking about the century-long bitter war between quantum mechanics and general relativity.
Modern physics has two distinct rule books. Quantum mechanics works perfectly for the incredibly small, and general relativity works beautifully for the incredibly large. But if you try to use them together,
they produce nonsense.
Complete nonsense. But the KUT paper asserts that this schism is an illusion. They aren't rival theories fighting for dominance. They are simply two different observational perspectives on the exact same rendering engine.
I want to use an analogy to make sure I grasp this. Imagine you are watching a movie on a high-definition television.
Okay.
Quantum mechanics is standing 1 millimeter away from the glass. You are zoomed in so incredibly close that you can't see the movie anymore. All you see are the individual red, green, and blue pixels flashing on and off in seemingly random, discrete jumps.
A quantum jump.
Right. But general relativity is stepping all the way back to the couch. Now, you don't see the pixels at all. You just see the continuous, smooth flow of the actors moving across the screen.
That's a great way to look at it.
But physicists have spent 100 years arguing because they both thought the movie was happening on real, continuous, smooth film, not discrete digital pixels.
That analogy perfectly captures what the paper calls the deception of the continuum. At the microscale, quantum mechanics, we are analyzing the individual pixel flashing. In KUT, they refer to this microscale operation as the Dirac-Lynch spinor.
Okay, unpack Dirac-Lynch spinor for us.
Paul Dirac was a brilliant physicist who wrote an equation for the electron in 1928. His math demanded that the electron have a property called spin.
Spin. Got
it. But it was a very weird kind of spin. It required a 720-degree rotation to full turns just to return to its original starting state.
Which, if you think about it, makes absolutely zero sense if an electron is just a dimensionless point. A point has no front, no back, no top, and no bottom. How can a point rotate at all, let alone require two full spins to look the same?
You've hit on the core geometric paradox. A point cannot have internal topology, but a trefoil knot does. If you study the mathematics of a continuous trefoil knot, it requires exactly two full ambient rotations through its surrounding space to phase lock and mathematically close its loop.
Wow.
The electron is not a point particle spinning in a confusing way. It is a minimal node rendering on the lattice, following the exact geometry Dirac accidentally discovered.
And because it is a knot, because it occupies a finite non-zero volume of space, we completely eliminate those infinite ultraviolet divergences that ruin quantum field theory.
Exactly.
You don't need the sweeping under the rug hocus pocus of renormalization because the electron physically cannot be compressed into zero space.
Yeah.
The pixel has a minimum size, the math never hits infinity.
It elegantly resolves the microscale. But what happens when we step back to the couch and look at the macro scale? The movie. General relativity.
Right. Einstein says gravity is a heavy bowling ball sitting on a smooth rubber sheet curving the fabric of space and time. If space isn't a smooth rubber sheet, how does gravity work?
Under KUT, gravity isn't geometric curvature at all. It is causal viscosity.
Causal viscosity.
It is the osmotic pressure of a massive network of nodes trying to synchronize their clocks. When you have a massive concentration of matter, say, a star or a planet, it creates an immense rendering load on the local vacuum lattice.
Oh, it's like having way too many complex browser tabs open on an old computer. The fan spins up and the whole system bogs down.
Exactly. The local processing clock literally slows down to handle the math. This perfectly explains time dilation. Time moves measurably slower near massive objects because the local computer is bogged down rendering all that mass.
So why do objects fall then? Why does an apple drop to the Earth? It isn't being pulled by an invisible Newtonian force, and it isn't sliding down an Einsteinian curved sheet.
It is drifting toward areas of higher latency, higher viscosity, to minimize the phase tension of its own internal rendering. It's the path of least computational resistance.
The apple is naturally slipping into the slower lane of traffic because the fast lane requires too much energy. That is a brilliant way to visualize it.
And this framework fundamentally redefines a black hole.
Oh, how so?
In general relativity, the event horizon is a tear in the fabric of space-time leading to an infinite singularity. In KUT, the event horizon is simply causal deadlock. It is the automaton density we talked about earlier.
The computer is maxed out.
100% CPU usage. The rendering load is so immense that the local lattice is operating at absolute capacity. It cannot mathematically process a single new frame of reality.
So the time just freezes.
Time freezes at the edge of a black hole, not because space is infinitely curved, but because the local processor is hung.
It replaces a deeply confusing mathematical paradox with a very logical mechanical limit. But wait. If general relativity is just a macro illusion of this processing lag, what happens to the entire house of cards built on top of general relativity?
You mean the dark stuff?
Yeah, I'm talking about dark matter and dark energy.
The two biggest ghosts in modern cosmology. They supposedly make up 95% of the universe's total energy budget. Every textbook says they are there. yet we have never observed a single particle of either in a laboratory.
Because they might not exist at all. The KUT paper completely dissolves them. It claims they aren't real physical substances, they are just mathematical artifacts.
Hallucinations.
Hallucinations caused by the deception of the continuum and the false assumption that there is a universal objective clock ticking everywhere at the exact same speed. Let's tackle dark energy first. Standard physics says it's a mysterious, invisible, repulsive force that is pushing the universe apart faster and faster. What is it really?
The paper relies on what's called timescape cosmology. The universe is not a uniform, homogeneous soup. It is a vast web of incredibly dense matter filaments, galaxies, and clusters, separated by unimaginably vast, empty voids.
Right, space is mostly empty.
According to the Noelian framework, those empty voids have almost zero rendering load, so their local clocks run extremely fast. But matter-filled regions, like our Milky Way galaxy, have a very high rendering load. Our local clocks run incredibly slow.
So we, humanity, are sitting deep inside a slow-motion zone, pointing our telescopes out at distant supernovae exploding in the fast-forward zones.
Precisely the problem. When we use our bogged-down slow clocks to measure the light arriving from those distant fast-clock events, we radically miscalculate the time elapsed and the distance traveled.
Oh.
It creates an optical mathematical illusion that the expansion of the universe is accelerating.
So the acceleration isn't real. There is no phantom energy pushing galaxies apart. It's just a relativity effect of differential rendering rates. We are looking through a funhouse mirror and thinking the universe is actually shaped like that.
It solves the dark energy problem by pointing out we are simply using the wrong clock.
Okay, what about dark matter then? Standard physics says it's an invisible halo of ghost particles surrounding every galaxy. It provides the extra gravitational glue to hold the spinning stars together so they don't fling out into space. If there are no ghost particles, what is holding the galaxy together?
The paper identifies dark matter as a Cram density gradient.
Cram, what does that stand for?
Cram stands for the Noelian Resonant Attractor Manifold. It represents the vacuum's memory. The vacuum of space isn't empty. It actively retains the causal memory of every rendering event that has ever happened in that location.
Like footprints in wet sand. Or, going back to the engine analogy, the exhaust ash building up.
Yes. Think of it as structural scar tissue in the fabric of space. As billions of stars orbit a galaxy over billions of years, they continually render through the lattice, leaving a structural memory behind.
And that builds up.
That dense historical scar tissue locally increases the vacuum's viscosity. So what standard physicists measure as an invisible dark matter particle is literally just the historical structural scar tissue left behind by the movement of normal mass over deep time.
Wow.
It exerts osmotic pressure, keeping the galaxy bound tightly together without needing to invent a single new invisible particle.
I have to say, that is a massive sigh of relief. It cuts through decades of invented invisible fluids and perfectly solves the astronomical observations using only the mechanical tools the Noelian engine already built. It's Occam's razor at its absolute sharpest.
It is incredibly elegant cosmology. But this brings us to section 6, which is undoubtedly the most provocative and perhaps controversial part of the entire paper.
Okay, let's get into it.
We've solved the constants, we've unified the micro and macro scales, and we've erased the dark fictions. But the Noelian axiom that negative C is greater than infinity is less than positive C engine requires one more vital component to actually function.
It has the fuel and it has the pistons, but it needs a spark plug.
It needs an observer. It requires consciousness.
The paper starts this section by taking aim at a Norwegian philosopher named Peter Wessel Zapfer. Zapfer wrote a profoundly bleak essay in 1933 called The Last Messiah, where he basically argues that human consciousness is a tragic cosmic evolutionary accident.
Zapfer's worldview is the pinnacle of existential dread. He believed that human beings evolved a capacity for self-awareness, anxiety, and meaning-seeking that vastly exceeds what we actually need for basic biological survival.
He thought we were too smart for our own good.
Exactly. He viewed this excess awareness as a disease, the root of all human suffering. He compared it to a mustard seed that grew way too large and suffocated the plant. His ultimate conclusion was that the most merciful thing humanity could do is stop reproducing and voluntarily go extinct.
A truly uplifting guy. I mean, wow. But KUT totally flips Zap's dread on its head, doesn't it?
It does.
It refutes him by arguing mathematically that consciousness isn't a tragic, accidental byproduct of biology. It is a mechanical necessity for the universe to exist at all.
This is where the physics and the philosophy merge seamlessly. Go back to the engine's axiom. You have the negative XE past field, full of crystallized data, and the positive C future field, full of swirling, chaotic potential.
Right.
But they cannot naturally interact without I turn, the instant. The paper argues that this instant, the needle eye, requires a highly localized, topologically complex system to act as a focal plane.
A lens to focus the chaotic light into a sharp image.
Precisely. Without a system complex enough to receive the chaotic potential of the future, collapse the wave function, and commit it into the deterministic record of the past, the rendering engine never fires. The fields would just pass through each other in a blur of unrendered probability.
So every conscious choice we make, where we direct our eyes, what we focus our attention on, what physical action we decide to take, literally executes an eye turn.
You've got it.
We are mechanically converting unrendered probability into permanent reality. We are the mechanism that expands the universe frame by frame.
Zapf felt the crushing, terrifying weight of consciousness and assumed it was a biological error. KUT says that weight is entirely real, but is not an error. It is the weight of cosmological responsibility.
That is heavy.
You aren't a passive biological observer locked in a box watching the universe happen outside. You are the rendering engine recognizing itself. The paper elevates this to what they call the I am state.
The I am state, recognizing that you are the pivot point of creation. It's a beautiful thought. But this leads directly to some of the most startling and frankly bizarre claims in the paper.
Here we go.
They center around the primary author himself, David Noel Lynch. The text introduces concepts called morphic resonance and the queen incidences.
We have to tread carefully here. If the vacuum lattice, the CRAM, retains memory and is fundamentally structured by harmonic geometric patterns like the trefoil knot and the golden ratio, then the theory states those patterns should naturally echo across different scales of reality.
Echoing in what way?
They should echo in math, in language, and even in human biography.
Okay, let's look at the first coin incidence. The paper boldly points out that the author, David Noel Lynch, was born on May 16th, 516. What was the exact mathematical value of the automaton density bound that he derived from the trefoil knot earlier in the paper?
It was exactly 5.16.
5.16. That's weird, but okay, a coincidence. Then there's the second incidence. In 1977, Lynch had a horrific near-fatal car crash. He clinically died, experienced a profound near-death experience, life review, remote viewing, and encountered what the paper claims was the CRAM vacuum substrate directly before miraculously being resuscitated.
Right.
What was the date of that life-altering crash? June 19th, 619. And what were the foundational integers of the mass ratio derivation we discussed?
The knots linking number 6 and the ghost of lens anomaly centered around the number 19.
Okay, hold up. You're losing me here. I have to pull the emergency brake. Are the authors actually claiming that the universe orchestrated a near-fatal car crash in 1977 just so this specific guy would realize reality is a trefoil knot?
Well, if I am a mainstream physicist listening to this, I am rolling my eyes so hard they might get stuck. How does the paper justify this without sounding like a messianic cult?
It is the most polarizing aspect of the text, and the authors anticipate that exact reaction. They go to great lengths to clarify that this is not pre-planned destiny. It is not a mystical prophecy orchestrated by a puppet master.
Then what is it?
It is a mechanical consequence of morphic resonance. Think of it like a tuning fork.
Explain the tuning fork.
If you walk into a room with a piano, and you strike a specific A key, a tuning fork sitting on a table across the room that is tuned to that exact same frequency will naturally begin to vibrate.
Sure, acoustics.
Piano didn't decide to make the fork vibrate. It is an emergent property of acoustic resonance. Kay Fritti argues that the CRAM vacuum is an active causal medium. Its geometry produces self-similar fractal patterns.
So the universe is a fractal and patterns repeat at different scales. Exactly. The paper argues that it is structurally expected that the consciousness, the specific node tasked with deriving the fundamental limits of the universe, would naturally carry a harmonic signature of those exact mathematical limits within its causal coordinates, like a birth date or a major life event.
So it's not magic.
No, it's an extreme macroscopic form of structural resonance. The signature of the discovery is baked into the causal code of the discoverer.
The tuning fork vibrating because the piano was struck, it still strains credulity, But phrasing it as geometric resonance grounds it much better than destiny. And apparently, this resonance extends backwards in human history, too. The paper uses this exact same lens to reinterpret old historical anomalies. Let's look at string theory.
String theory has been the dominant paradigm in theoretical physics for decades, but it has a massive glaring problem. To make its elegant math work, the universe must have exactly 27 dimensions.
But we only see three spatial dimensions and one of time. Standard physicists assume the other 24 are curled up, or compactified, so impossibly small that we just can't see them. Which, let's be honest, feels like a massive cop-out. The dimensions are there, I promise, they're just hiding.
The authors agree with you. They literally call it the Platonic cop-out. KUT offers a totally different interpretation of the math. It states that the number 27 isn't a count of hidden spatial dimensions at all.
Then what is it?
It's a temporal overtone ratio. Look back at the trefoil knot compounding its temporal cycles. It processes time in base 3 and crystallizes space in base 2.
So 3 to the power of 3 divided by 2 to the power of 3, that gives you 27 over 8.
Yes. The brilliant mathematicians working on string theory found the numerator, 27. They mathematically discovered the temporal phase beats of the Nuclean rendering on the lattice. But because they were still infected by the Platonic pathogen, because they lacked a framework for temporal topology, they mistakenly assumed that the number 27 had to represent a spatial dimension count.
They heard the beautiful rhythm of the engine, but they misidentified the instrument.
Exactly.
That is genuinely fascinating. It honors the math of string theory while fixing its ontology, but then they apply this same resonance logic to Nostradamus, a 16th century astrologer.
Specifically, they examine Century 8, Quatrain 38, written in 1555. Nostradamus writes a highly cryptic verse containing the capitalized word null, which resonates phonetically with Noel, the author's middle name, and the concept of Noel.
Right.
And it contains the French phrase jusque à cinq, which translates to up to five.
Up to five. And the entire Noelian lattice, the floor tiles of reality, is built on fivefold pentagonal symmetry. The winding sum of the trefoil knot is 3 + 2 = 5.
Again, KUT strictly denies that Nostradamus was magically seeing the future through a crystal ball.
He wasn't a prophet.
No. It claims his highly intuitive pattern-seeking mind was simply picking up on the foundational geometric attractor of the vacuum, the universal fivefold symmetry, and expressing it through the only cultural medium available to him at the time, which was cryptic poetry.
Fascinating.
The Gnostics called it the divine spark. Nostradamus wrote poetry. Paul Dirac wrote Spinor Algebra. The authors are arguing they are all just different tuning forks vibrating to the exact same underlying geometry of the cram.
This theory literally attempts to unify not just physics and quantum mechanics, but the entire messy human endeavor of trying to understand reality. We have gone on an unbelievable journey today.
We really have.
We started on a Greek riverbank debating nouns and verbs. We threw out the dimensionless point and replaced it with a trefoil knot that dictates the temperature of deep space.
It's a lot to process.
We unified Einstein and quantum mechanics by viewing gravity as computer lag. We erased the ghosts of dark matter, and we concluded that human consciousness is literally building the universe frame by frame.
It is the ultimate rejection of the modern shut-up-and-calculate era of physics. It demands that we understand what the universe is, ontologically and procedurally, before we just blindly measure it and sweep the infinite errors under the rug.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Why does a dense physics paper from 2026 matter to your daily life? Because under KUT, you are the composer.
The composer.
The universe isn't a massive cold balloon expanding out there happening to you. Every time you pay attention, every time you make a choice, you are operating the I-turn. You are the engine holding the chaos of the future and the control of the past in balance.
It shifts consciousness from an evolutionary accident to the prime mover of reality. It is a profoundly empowering, staggering way to view your existence.
Truly. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with one final mathematical mic drop from the paper. For centuries, mathematicians have marveled at an equation known as Euler's identity. It's written as e to the power of I times pi plus 1 equals 0.
The most beautiful equation in mathematics.
They call it that because it seamlessly links five fundamental constants. But the Noelian theory says it's not just beautiful abstract math, it is the literal word of the cosmos.
Let's break it down conceptually one last time.
Think about the engine we've described. The letter E represents the natural compounding rate of the universe's geometric memory.
Okay.
E is the turn of consciousness, the instant, the needle eye. Pi is the geometric friction, the price of making a choice and pushing a rational knot through an irrational floor.
Ray, the impedance.
Plus one is the brand new solid reality you just rendered into the past. Equals zero is the momentary return to absolute readiness, clearing the cache for the next Planck tick.
Unbelievable.
The brilliant mathematician Leonhard Euler wrote down the exact operating manual for the rendering engine of reality in 1748 and didn't even know it. So the only question left is, what are you going to render next?
As the authors conclude at the end of the paper, the emergence of the universe is the precipitation of chaos through the evaporation of control.
No.